Good evening. We've been looking at a character study in Joseph, looking at stair steps to godly living that led to spiritual growth or spiritual maturity in the life of Joseph. You'll remember that so far we have talked about Joseph with regards to the godly influence in his life, his own personal integrity, how he was able to manage desire, and basically God's favor in his life. Tonight, I want to talk about Joseph's why. In other words, knowing your why. And so to begin tonight, what I'd like to do is start reading in Genesis chapter 40, beginning with the first verse. And it reads like this. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in prison, where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in custody. And one night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody at his master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" They said to him, "We have had dreams, and there's no one to interpret those dreams." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." May the Lord add his blessing to this reading of his word. I've been reading a book by Eric Metaxas. The name of the book is If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. In the early chapters, Metaxas points out that the Statue of Liberty is placed facing away from the city of New York and ultimately towards the people that would have arrived when they were coming here from so many other places. It represented the original purpose of the American experiment. It wasn't just about us, it was about others. The statue is a figure, of course, you probably know it was a gift from France. It's a figure of Libertas. It's a Roman liberty goddess. She has a torch above her head. It's held in her right hand. And in her left hand, she has a tablet. And on that tablet is inscribed July 4th, 1776. Of course, you know that's the date of the Declaration of Independence for the United States. But also at her feet, there's a broken shackle and a chain. They're lying at her feet as she walks forward. And when this was a gift from France, it wasn't that long before that we had done away with slavery. The Civil War was over, and slavery had been abolished. After its dedication, the statue became an icon of freedom. It became an icon for the United States, and it welcomed immigrants who came here arriving by sea. At the base of its word, at the base of the statue are the words of the final words of a poem by Emma Lazarus. You've probably read these words before and certainly have heard them in speeches, but it's these words that I want to look at for a minute. It says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." As I read Metaxas's book in the early chapters, it makes you wonder about America's purpose, and I mean its original purpose. You don't have to agree with my thoughts. These are just what were stirred in me as I read the book. But it seems like sometimes we've lost our purpose in a lot of ways. We're no longer looking out like the Statue of Liberty. In fact, it seems to me like we've been looking in a lot more and for a long time. I suppose there are some reasons for that that we can't avoid. Yet at the same time, I fear that if we continue to be so self-centered, we'll lose our purpose. We'll lose our reason. We'll lose the original why of the United States of America. Well, there's a parallel in that in the Christian life. When Christians lose their way, or we forget our why, or we misinterpret our why, our walk with Jesus Christ becomes affected. Let me take you through this passage one verse at a time. In the first verse, sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. Sometime after this, we don't know how long Joseph was in prison before the baker and the cupbearer came to join him. We do know that the period from Joseph being sold by his brothers to the end of his imprisonment was somewhere around 13 or 14 years. You and I have spent 6 months in semi-confinement over a virus that's currently holding us semi-hostage, and it has been real tough. I know it's been tough on some of you. It's been tough on me. I want you to imagine 13 years in Joseph's situation. So he's in jail, and the cupbearer and the baker are placed there with him. In the second verse, it says, Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in the custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. You know, you might see this to be a random action. The baker, the cupbearer, they're placed in prison. Their destination is right where Joseph is. I'd have you look a little deeper. I just want you to think in the back of your head about what God designs, the hand of God at work in the circumstance. Fourth verse, the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended or took care of them, and they continued for some time in custody. Again, we don't know how long this was. We just know exactly what the writer of Genesis tells us. It was for some time. And in the fifth verse, one night, they both dreamed. That is the cupbearer and the chief baker. They both had a dream. And the baker, the king of Egypt, and the cupbearer, who were confined in the prison, they each had a dream, and each dream had its own interpretation. You know, it's no accident that two cellmates of Joseph dream in the same night, and they share that dream in the morning. Both of them, God is deeply at work in this story. So the scripture tells us in the sixth verse that Joseph came to them in the morning, and he saw that they were troubled. Here, if anything, I want you to notice the sensitivity of Joseph to his surroundings, but particularly his sensitivity to the others in his presence. And he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" Look at that question. He could look at them and he could see that something was wrong. Why are your faces downcast today? And in the eighth verse, they said to Joseph, "We have had dreams. There's no one that can interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." You know, the Egyptians shared a belief that sleep put us into direct contact with the place where the gods dwell. To dream, and in particular for both of these gentlemen to dream in the same night in the same prison, seemed to them, it would have meant to them that their fate was in the balance of that dream. The gods were communicating to them. But they had no one to explain it to them. In prison, all the experts in dreams, and there were such things, were unavailable. However, Joseph was available. And according to Joseph himself, it's not education, but inspiration that matters. "Do not interpretations belong to God?" he asked. We could read on in this chapter. There's much detail given in the dreams by these two gentlemen, and a great deal of time and effort is given to us understanding that Joseph is able to discern and interpret dreams. The writing style of this whole chapter is kind of different from the rest of the story, to the point that it would make you ask more questions. There's a lot of detail, but we aren't going to take the time to ask those questions tonight. There's enough in these first eight verses for us to understand a great deal of the development of Joseph. Not his character, but his person. And we will get to those questions in the next couple of weeks. The great question that Joseph has to be asking in this story is simply why? Why have I been sold into slavery? Why have I been falsely accused? Why am I sitting in this prison tending to two men who have had dreams, and why do I have the ability to interpret those dreams? The answer is found in the text, because Joseph said this, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" God doesn't need Joseph, but right here, right now, God is going to give those interpretations to Joseph. Later in this story, much further down the line, Pharaoh himself will have a dream. Joseph's words to Pharaoh are going to be just as similar, or just the same thing as what he said to the baker and the cupbearer. When you get to that passage out there in the later chapters of Genesis 40, here's what Joseph will say to Pharaoh. It does not depend on me, but God will declare to Pharaoh his well-being. See, Joseph understood that God had those interpretations, not Joseph. You know, sometimes we might get ourselves in circumstances where we ask the why question. Why is this happening? Why am I here? These would be cheap questions for Joseph. These would be questions that really were below his pay grade. The big question, the great question of why for Joseph has to be not why am I here and why is this happening, but rather, why has God gifted me to interpret these dreams? If dreams and their interpretation belong to God, then why has God placed me in this situation of interpreting two men's dreams who in time will lead me to be freed from prison, but it will also lead me to the place where I can interpret the dream of Pharaoh, and it will also lead me to being in charge of Egypt, all because, quote, interpretations belong to God. The question should be, why has God given me his interpretations? Whether you see it or not, or know it or not, Joseph is in the middle of the storm. He doesn't know what's on the shore. He doesn't know what's around the corner for the cupbearer. He doesn't know that the baker and the cupbearer will be freed only for one of them to be beheaded by Pharaoh. And Joseph clearly doesn't know that he'll be forgotten about for several years until Pharaoh needs him, because Pharaoh himself will have a dream. All that Joseph knows in the midst of this storm, in the midst of this imprisonment, is that God interprets dreams. And for some reason, he has given that interpretation to Joseph. Joseph's why question should not be the pathetic cry of one who's been wronged unjustly. Make no mistake, Joseph has been wronged unjustly several times, multiple times if you consider each of his brothers as a separate event. Joseph's why question was not an invitation to a pity party for his situation. And our why question shouldn't become that either. When life gets tough, we can cry about it, or we can cry out to God to make sense of it. And that is why, that is Joseph's true why question. What's the purpose of all this? Why is all this happening? Hear me very clearly, church. Not what is the purpose of this happening to me, like some sort of a victim. Not why is this happening to me as a victim of these circumstances. Rather, why is this happening in the sense of the purpose or the greater good of God's ultimate plan? To answer that question is rarely answered when you're in the middle of the storm. And we think that's when we need to hear the answer. If you've ever read the story of Joseph, it's Genesis 37 to 50. If you've never read it, I'd encourage you to. Even if you have, I'd ask you to go back and look at it again. Because everything that happens to Joseph adds up in Genesis chapter 50. It makes sense. But none of it gets any prettier along the way. There was purpose in it, but it was hard to see. Ultimately, Joseph concludes, his brothers meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And there's the answer to the why question. Why is this happening? Well, because your brothers are evil. They're sinful. Why is this happening? Because God has a plan even when you can't see it. You know, in the book of Isaiah, the nation of Israel is going to be spoken to by God concerning his greater purpose. Israel had fallen prey to false gods. They'd allowed themselves to worship false gods. Invading armies were coming in, and those gods had to be transported so they wouldn't be destroyed. And in the 46th chapter of Isaiah, God sarcastically speaks to Israel. And he points out to them that their gods are now horizontal. That means they're not standing upright. They were being carried out of town. And God sarcastically goes on to ask, when did you ever carry me? No, for all this time, you were stubborn and rebellious, and Israel, even through that, I have carried you. He continues that everything he said would happen, would happen. And ultimately, his purposes would be accomplished. When you get to the 10th and the 11th verses, this is Isaiah 46, verses 10 and 11. Listen to what God speaks to Israel. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times, things not yet done, saying, my counsel will stand, and I will accomplish my purpose. I will bring it to pass, I have purposed it, and I will do it. Now, sometimes, in the midst of the most difficult times, when we are asking our why questions, God has to remind us of why. He reminded Israel, you fell prey to other gods. You left me and went after them, but I stayed with you no matter what. Because God, when he reminds us of his why, at the end of the day, if we don't do something about it, well, Jesus said the rocks and the stones would cry out if need be. At the end of the day, God will be praised. At the end of the day, God's purpose will always be accomplished. Joseph's circumstances were difficult, but God had a purpose, and he was accomplishing it, even though Joseph couldn't see it in the midst of the storm. Christians find ourselves in trying times, and we're asking the why question. We need to ask not so much about our circumstances, as much about God's ultimate purpose. What is God trying to accomplish in this? What is his purpose here? Book of Romans, chapter 8, 28 to 30, the Apostle Paul understood this principle. In Romans 8, 28, he said this, we know that for those who love God, all things work together for the good. For those who are called according to his purpose, for those who he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he might be the firstborn amongst many brothers. And those who he predestined, he also called. And those who he called, he also justified. And those who he justified, he also glorified. You know what Paul's saying to us? The matters of our lives, when we know and serve Jesus, those things, like a recipe, they work together for the good. The good things, the bad things, all things work together for those who love God. We'll be conformed to the image of his Son, Jesus. You know, today Jesus is glorified. If you were to see Jesus today, you would not believe the beauty, the awe of being in his presence. I think like Moses, we'd probably have to wear a mask around others. Imagine that. Because the glory of Jesus cannot be imagined. But you need to remember that before Jesus was glorified, before he ascended, before he was resurrected, he was crucified. And albeit as much as we talk about the awe, the wonder, and the glory of Jesus, that crucifixion really was none of that. The crucifixion was ugly, it was difficult, and it was deadly. But it was, and remember this, church, it was part of God's purpose. Without that death, you and I die forever. Without that death, we live without God forever. And God's purpose when he created you and when he created me was relationship. So in spite of our sin, separating us from God and breaking that relationship, God's purpose in the death of Jesus on the cross was good, to forgive us and to restore us to himself. Do you remember what Paul said? All things work together for the good. All things. You can see that even in the life of Jesus. Joseph didn't know why he was in slavery. He didn't know why he was in prison. He didn't know why his brothers did this. He didn't know why the two men who had these dreams and were placed in prison with him were there. But he knew this. God reveals dreams. And God would reveal them to Joseph. You see, in a sense, Joseph walked by faith. And the knowledge he had, as short-sighted and nonsensical as it seemed at the time. Jesus said, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you could move mountains. But you know, it's the planting, the nurturing, the waiting on the seed to burst through the earth that grows one's faith. And that is usually difficult work. When your eyes can't see it, sometimes you have to let your faith explain it. And I guess that brings me to a not so very good bottom line, but I'm going to use it anyway. When your eyes can't see, why your faith shouldn't die. When your eyes can't see why your faith shouldn't die, that's it. Whatever the circumstance we find ourselves in, difficult, hard, easy, whatever, we walk by faith and not by sight. Our human eyes may deceive us. We may live in the moment, but the purposes of God are written in chapters, moments of time. So the big and the small things matter. In the face of the toughest times, we need to remember that because we are His, all things work together for the good to those that are called according to His purposes. The why question is because it's God's purpose. The why question, the answer is God can make it work together. So church, hang in there. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless you. Stay true to Jesus.